ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
थैंक यू, थैंक यू. I'd like that personal spiritual development, PSD. As I can tell, that's what you're into. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here if I'm not incorrect. And it's always a pleasure to be back here at Salesforce because it's a very high consciousness here, starting with the CEO, and it pervades the organization. So it's a great pleasure to combine the two things, practical world and side by side, cultivate knowledge of our higher self and ways to be balanced in life and many other benefits. And I will tell you a story, one that inspired me in my practice of mantra meditation, which is what I'll be talking about a lot today, because it's very practical, it's portable, something you can take with you and use wherever you go. You're provided standard equipment for mantra meditation if you have a tongue, ears, and a little feeling in your heart. That's all you need. When the news came of the Malaysian Airlines flight that went off course and that it was lost, around that time, I was here in California in my home in Burlingame, and I was sitting in the garden for my early morning meditation. And for some reason, I was very melancholy. I was empathizing with the people on the flight. I fly all the time, and I was just feeling what it would be like. It's hard enough leaving home, going somewhere else. You have many expectations. And of course, in life, when our expectations go the opposite direction, it causes not a little consternation, but it can be very troubling. What to speak of if you're on an airline and it obviously has gone off track. To add to the pathos of the whole situation, the transponder didn't work for some reason, and to this day nobody knows why. The transponder in the plane, which is a device, electronic device, that informs the control tower where the flight is. And either it got turned off or it wasn't working. But in any case, the plane itself was lost without a trace. And of course, it gives a little more perspective how vast our planet is compared to us. The big ocean, the flight goes over the ocean, and then it's just gone. And nobody knows where it is. They searched, they spent millions and millions of dollars trying to find the flight and the people, but they didn't. And one of the reasons cited was because that little device, which is a transponder, sends out a signal, it gets picked up, and then you can triangulate and find where it is. So, as I was sitting doing my mantra meditation, I was thinking of how much it's like having a transponder on. Because mantra meditation uses the power of sound vibration, putting it out there into the vast universe, in comparison with which I'm absolutely insignificant in size. And when the sound goes out, there's a reciprocation. This is the idea behind mantra meditation. So then I was considering how one of the ways I become lost in the world and to myself is because I don't have my transponder on. So a friend of mine in Japan made this little picture for all of you of a little mantra meditation person sitting there. And if you look at the little pack that he has over his heart, you'll notice that it says on. So that's the transponder. And the title of this section at the top, you'll see, you are here. It's an intentional misspelling. And the play on words I liked very much because it indicates that what we hear is what we become. And this is one of the very interesting aspects behind the science of mantra meditation, is that the sound vibration shapes our consciousness and it directs the way we're going in life, and it's very creative also. The kinds of sounds we make or the kinds of sounds that we listen to develop our reality. That's a short introduction to what we'll be talking about today. But before I go much further, I'd just like to hear from you. What brought you here today? What was the impetus in coming in a word or two? Or paragraph, if you like. Yeah, we have a microphone for the audience. You can yell out, but there's a lot of people online, and when they can hear you, if that's flipped, you have to start over or fix it, because it doesn't work like that.
So just to hear about a different way of meditating was what brought me here.
Nice, nice. So you're a meditator, and then you heard about meditation, so you're investigating all the different aspects.
Exactly.
I love that. It's really nice to go deeply within a practice.
I'm suffering from migraines, so I'm hoping that meditation, I already do meditate, but maybe longer meditation would be additional
helpful. Nice. I'm sorry to hear that you're suffering. Please now see yourself walking on a soft golden brown pathway with a tangle of green trees and flowers on either side. At the end of the pathway is a yellow door. As you push the door open, you're greeted by an expanse of soothing light. The light envelops you, and you feel warm and safe. You've entered your inner world, the place in which you can taste the nectar of your own consciousness. Close the door to the outside world behind you and be fully present. Stay unattached from any thoughts. Observe them, but don't engage them. Just watch them float by. They're not you. They're energy that's around you. Become a dispassionate witness with no need or responsibility to react. And please come back to your breath and relax your feet and your legs. Let gravity take them. Relax your abdomen and your chest, your rib cage. Let the tension go out of your back and your shoulders and your neck. And now be aware of the muscles around your face. And just let them relax. No need to make any expression. And just breathe naturally. Feel positively that you exist. Observe one by one. Your hands. Notice that you have hands. Your legs. Your head. Your hair. Notice that you are the one looking at them, but that they are not you. You are separate from the things that you see. The seer and the seen are different. Feel that you are not the body. Now see your thoughts and feel how you are not even your thoughts. You're only the witness of your thoughts. Now become aware that your power to hear, to touch things, your power of seeing, your ability to taste and smell, to walk, speak, and digest are all inexplicable powers given to you. Now become aware of your intelligence. Notice how your intelligence gives you directions, like those from an unseen expert who is always with you and available, even when you sleep. The Yoga Sutras call this benevolent guide the super self. Now that you're aware that you're a conscious entity residing within a body made of material elements, please listen to this seed mantra called Omkar, pronounced in one syllable. And after I say it one time, if you'd like to join in the resonance of this mantra, then just use your vocal cords to utter the mantra in unison. And let's try it all together. Just let the vibration come out of your mouth and try to resonate with the sound. And now the last two mantras, please let your consciousness ride on the vibrations of the mantra and take you beyond your body. Now please remain in this space and listen to a sacred text from the Bhagavad Gita and meditate on this text. The sky, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it is all-pervading. Similarly, the spiritual essence, situated in transcendental vision, does not mix with the body, though situated in that body. Thus, knowing yourself to be a transcendental being, steady your mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. Now feel your fingers and wiggle them around a little bit, your toes. Slowly open your eyes, come back into the room. And welcome back. So, this exercise is not so hard to do because what is called tattva in Sanskrit means Tut is a demonstrative pronoun. I mean, it's pointing to something and saying, that exists. So your consciousness, according to the Vedas, is something that actually exists, and it's permanent, it's steady, stable. It's something that you can observe for yourself, and you can also notice the difference between you, the conscious being, and the things around you. And the things around you include the mind, which is made of subtle energy, which processes different kinds of thoughts and desires, and obviously the physical body as well. This physical body we can easily see through a little bit of analysis is made out of material elements, levers and pulleys and so forth, and pumps. And I don't say I hand, but I say my hand. And I was trying to get a little perspective in the meditation also, that it's easy enough to identify with the body, but it's also easy enough to step back from it and see that it's going on pretty much without me, and I'm the observer going along for the ride within the body. So this brings to a philosophical point that is helpful in the Bhagavad Gita, which describes that the body is called the field, and the conscious being, ourselves, within the body is called the knower of the field. So this distinction is important in meditation because we have two aspects to our life, and that's why I've written here that we have a dual existence. That we have our life situation, which is the present situation we're in now, including our bodies, minds, and the kinds of engagements that we have in our life. And we also have our life. And there's a difference between our life and our life situation that we can see for ourselves through the meditation. And the reason the mantra is especially powerful, and we can look at this together in the first section in sound, that sound is a very powerful element. In fact, it's used in many different ways. There's ultrasound, which you may be familiar with. Anybody know about ultrasound? What's it used for a lot, famously? Yeah, when a woman's pregnant, they'll put that little wand and move it, and you can actually see the baby inside. So you can see beyond what you can with your eyes through ultrasound, because it's putting out a very subtle frequency of sound, and it's reporting back. And then, do you know about sonar? It's used a lot underwater, so we can't see very far underwater, but the sonar brings an image back of what's actually going on there. So now, mantra, we are able to transmit the mantra just like the sonar machine and also the ultrasound machine. We are little machines also, at least we have a mechanical aspect in our physical aspect of our lives. And we can emit a sound vibration that reveals that which we can't normally see. We don't see with our eyes. And the most prominent aspect of our existence that it reveals is the difference between the field and the knower of the field. In other words, the consciousness can become conscious of itself. And in the wisdom literatures, like the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutras, it's highly recommended that one take a little time to do this. Because if one is able to observe one's own nature, then it's a source of stability and happiness, because there's a kind of satisfaction in knowing that we actually exist. Because as I'm identifying with my life situation, I have a tendency to think that things are moving a little too fast for me. Can anybody relate to that? Or there's a sense that it could end at any time. I'm almost painfully, but it's subtle, aware of the fact that whatever I have and whatever situation I'm in now, it's going to change. And that causes a lot of anxiety. So there's a sense of self that one can gain through the meditation, and especially through emitting the mantra, which is said to be transcendental sound. So if you put out a sonar, you'll see what's in the ocean. If you put out the ultrasound, you can see what's in the body. And when you put out the mantra, you'll be able to see more of your spiritual nature. And the more you're attuned to the mantra, the more you'll become aware of it. So it's a very powerful tool for meditation, saying the mantra. Now, the word mantra comes from Sanskrit. And man means mind, and tra comes from the word triyate, which means to rise above or to deliver. So one, through the mantra, is able to transcend the mind, which you'll find in the main teachings on meditation, starting from the Yoga Sutras by Patanjali. The mind is the source of anxiety for us, because I tend to become overwhelmed by its thoughts that it manufactures constantly. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the section where the student asks the teacher about what is the nature of somebody who's steadily in higher consciousness, the teacher responds, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partan manogatan. And that is, the person's able to observe the mind and see that it's churning out all kinds of ideas and thoughts and constantly moving, but not identify with those energies that are coming out of the mind. It's like a little factory that's producing all kinds of conjuring ideas and desires coming out on a conveyor belt constantly, going 24 hours a day, even when you sleep. But the person who's able to get some stability by seeing that's not me, and I'm not obligated to take all those products that are being produced by the mind, is able to attain atmanivatmana tushta. Please say tushta. It's a nice word in Sanskrit. It means satisfaction. It's almost onomatopoeic, because that word tushta, it means a person who's able to transcend the mind and experience him or herself and actually see that I'm the consciousness behind the body, I'm not the body, that person actually feels some satisfaction. So the sound can do that. Now, I discovered in my research, because I'm writing a book on meditation now, and I was looking into the concept of acoustic resonance. And this says that every object in the world has a certain kind of frequency. And when you match the same frequency with the particular object, then it hits its maximum vibration. So there's a kind of acoustic resonance that our body has, and there's a type of acoustic resonance that our self or the Atma has. And again, I'm distinguishing between the two, because in the wisdom literatures that teach yoga, the two energies, that is, the field and the knower of the field, are categorically different energies. The mantra resonates with the knower of the field, or the consciousness. And therefore, when repeating the mantra, one can feel very much attuned to it, because it's what's called scientifically excitation. When you add a kind of energy to a particular object, even a small molecule or an atom, then it can bring it to a higher state of energy. And similarly, the mantra, when we apply it to ourselves, that is our higher conscious selves, it brings this excitation, which means we become more fully aware of who we are and what our self is. And this is one of the first objectives of meditation, is to be able to see that distinction between myself and or the knower of the field and the field. Now, before I go to any more of the elements of the talk, we'll take a few reflections. Anything that you felt so far from the gathering, the meditation, or any of the monologues so far, any of the concepts that stuck with you? You can just reflect them back, and we'll give you a microphone. Yes. Is that on? Okay. Keep it close, yeah.
So I struggle with sleep a lot at night, and what you were describing is exactly what happens, where when I get into bed is when the rush of the thoughts come, and I try to do what you're saying, which is basically kind of thinking about it, you know, not relating to them, but kind of stepping out and thinking about the thoughts and realizing that they're not me, but they're just thoughts that I'm having about the day, or you know, whatever it may be. So in that case, what do you suggest, or how can I implement the practice here?
Thank you. What a great question. That's very practical. So you'll notice that halfway down the second page, there's a category in blue that says resonate with transcendental sound. Then it says how to attain higher energy states. That's actually a scientific term that deals with excitation, that certain particles can attain higher energy states from an outside influence. But there's a way in which, in the yoga teachings, one can prepare oneself to be more resonant with transcendental sound. And I've written on the second part of this about voluntary lifestyle changes. I call these VLCs. And I keep a list of them for myself, VLCs. Voluntary lifestyle changes. There are recommended ways in which you can adjust your environment in everyday life gradually, because it's not so easy to change things normally. But if you do it incrementally, you'll start to notice that you're more resonant with the mantra, and internally you're able to cultivate this type of meditation more easily. Because in the science of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a theory of the three modes of material nature. There's three major modalities that we're dealing with all the time. And there are combinations and permutations of these modalities. And they affect us in body, mind, and also spirit. And we can fortunately learn to adopt certain lifestyle changes that help us to come to the higher levels of the modes of nature. So the highest level is called sattva. And from that mode, one is much more able to resonate with the sound vibration. Also, it's easier to control the mind and to be more peaceful, insightful, and so forth. In the middle mode, which is called rajas, also sometimes translated as passion, there's a kind of rush of energy that's going and that's compelling me to be restless, to move forward and try to get more things, and it's hard to be introspective in that mode. And then the lowest mode, which is called tamas, has inertia, darkness. If you've ever been in a situation where, have you ever procrastinated on anything? Thank you for saying that, makes me feel better. That there's a way in which there may be a little tinge of tamas. Because you know what to do, but you just can't do it. It's like something's holding you down. You can't get up and move. You know you need to clean the house, but you can't even like move one finger to get up and move one sock off the floor. That's kind of tamas energy. And so these energies are something to be aware of, because there's a way that we practically deal with them. I've listed three categories of ways that you can adjust your lifestyle. There are general categories of voluntary lifestyle changes, or VLCs, that have to do with our habits, making a list of what habits we have now and seeing ways in which we can transform those into better habits. There's also association has a lot to do with the kinds of modes that we're in now. According to the wisdom literatures, whomever you're associating with, you'll begin to take on similar modes. So if you're around somebody who's really affected by the lower modes of material nature, by that association, you'll start to pick those up. But if you keep association with people who are more high-minded or disciplined and also insightful and so forth, you'll pick up that also. And finally, attitude. There are attitude adjustments that one can make that help to bring a higher resonance. So that is one of the ways that this is a holistic science. When you chant the mantra, it actually helps you in many ways to transcend the currents of the mind that may be disturbing you. And at the same time, you can do your part as well by voluntarily making life changes that make you more resonant at the same time. Sort of a 50-50 formula. Does that make sense? Yeah, you're welcome. What other thoughts did you have? Yes. And you know, okay. Yeah.
Brought a question. In my mind, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind. So, like, how do I define who I am?
If you're not the body and you're not the mind, this just went off or something. Yes.
And then the last one was, like, example, what happens once I lose the body and the mind, right? Like, what world am I living in if I'm kind of disassociated with the brain and the body?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you so much. Wherever I go, I find it a constant struggle with technology. I always have to do some patchwork. Well, that's a very kind of deep question in a way, but it's described throughout these wisdom literatures I keep referring to in minute detail. I'll try to give a summary, and that is that first I'll give an analogy. The body is like hardware, the mind is like software, and the user is like the Atma, or the conscious self. That's kind of contemporary, right? So there's a way in which it's described in the wisdom literatures that the body really is kind of a mechanical device, but the subtle mind, it's distinguished, it's called the citta, combined package of the mind and the intellect, which are two different divisions of the citta. And then there's what's called the ahankar, which is a really kind of interesting subtle element, which is sort of the juncture between myself and the physical world. And so what happens, you were asking, when? Oh, how do you define yourself? So, you know, in Sanskrit, the self is called Atma. So the Atma can refer to body, mind, or spirit. But as I pointed out in the beginning, the part that's actually permanent is the Atma that's referring to the consciousness, the conscious being. You say spirit, it can be sort of a almost an amorphous word that anybody can say anything, but in Sanskrit it's called Atma. It's an individual particle of consciousness, which is your identity that's permanent. The body's not permanent. You can discern that by just looking at yourself in a mirror every couple of years and noticing that you have a different body. Even scientifically speaking, every 7 years you have a regeneration of all the different cells in your body, and you have a different body altogether. And this is one of the points that's made in the wisdom literatures like Bhagavad Gita, and that is that you really are in a, you're calling it one thing, but it's never the same thing. For instance, if you step in, what river do we have around here? Any rivers?
Polluted one.
Polluted? There's a Russian river, right?
Yeah, Russian.
Russian river's not so bad. So if you go to the Russian river and you put your foot in, if you come back a day later and you put your foot in, you say, I just stepped in this Russian river twice. Now you can say that, but technically it's not true, because really the Russian river isn't one thing, it's Russian. I mean, it's moving. It's the Russian river. And it's constantly changing, so there's this way in which the body as the field is described as being like a river. It's constantly changing. So this idea about death, if I may be so bold, not a topic you bring up at Thanksgiving or anything, but the fact is that this whole idea means the body's always dying. It's always undergoing change, because death is just a change. And so the mechanics of it are described in the Bhagavad Gita, that when we give up a physical body, we really can't stay in forever, but when we do leave it, we take the mental body with us. And there's empiric evidence for this also at the University of Virginia. Are you aware of this? There's a whole department there that was endowed by a very wealthy industrialist. And before he passed away, he wanted a department to talk about what happens after you leave the body. And there have been several books produced from that which document children who remember their past lives when they're about 5 or 6 years old. It's a scientific department. It's not something that's based on any spiritual science or anything like that. They're just documenting cases, and they have thousands of them published now, of kids who actually accurately remember where they were in their last life. And it's accurate because they've gone back and checked it out. And that's just one aspect if you want to look from an empiric point of view. But you can see for yourself through meditation that you're not your body or your mind. But the mind goes with us when we go to the next body. In fact, that's what's determining the kind of environment that we're in the next life, is the way we've developed our consciousness. So the idea behind the practice of meditation and so forth is actually to develop a higher consciousness so that you're not entangled in the lower energies of the material world. I made that a little abstract, but there's a lot to be said about that, but that's the general idea that's presented in the ancient yogic literatures. Was that too esoteric? Not for you guys, right? Okay, are any other reflections from the experience so far? Or should I keep going? You vote. It's democratic. Keep going? Okay. So, we have a choice of what to listen to. And this is what I would argue is our main choice. We have attention, and you can place your attention wherever you wish. And the idea is that if you give your attention to a higher vibration, especially sound vibration, and this is very much stressed throughout the yogic literature, that it's the sound that you expose yourself to that will determine your consciousness. And when your consciousness is determined in a certain way, that will form your outer world and your circumstances. So the main choice then is, what kind of sound will I listen to? And the mantra, as I began, is a kind of transponder. You can turn it on yourself and be self-determining in that way to emit the mantra. And when you repeat the mantra and listen to it, you're connecting to a higher vibration, and it helps to reform you inwardly, and that begins to transform your world outwardly. Ways in which to talk about the mantra. One way is that it's a seed. If you look at any kind of seed, you'll find that it's a little bit mysterious, because what is a seed anyway? It's hard to discern. It's a tiny little, seemingly insignificant entity, kind of dry and hard. But when you put water, light, soil, and it sprouts, it turns into a whole living organism that has its own volition and develops in various ways. So the mantra is often compared to a seed as well. So the seed theory means if you take the seed, for instance, we did the mantra Om, right? This is called a seed mantra. And you may say it's just one syllable, what's in that? Well, you might say that with a seed also, it's just one little tiny little round ball, what's in that? But if you actually plant it and you water it by repeating the mantra, or watering the seed in that case, you'll notice that it will sprout for you. And you'll start to see the magic behind the mantra. And the seed will begin to give fruits. And there's an extensive analogy given by one of the great teachers of mantra who lived over 500 years ago in India. And actually, the way he taught mantra was so pervasive, the practice of mantra meditation, that even today there are many descendants of his students all over the world. His name was Chaitanya. And he taught about the power of mantra meditation especially, and he brought out all the most important teachings of the Vedas to advocate that, especially in this day and age, and 500 years ago was astrologically it was the same age, but now it's a little more intense than it was 500 years ago because they didn't have cell phones back then. There's a lot more distractions now. He indicated that in this particular age, the mantra would be efficacious, especially because of all the distractions, and it's a great help to have the mantra. And he gave this analogy that we're all like gardeners. And in your garden of your heart, if you plant the mantra and you water it, then it'll grow. And actually, he said, it'll grow beyond the confines of the material world altogether. And you'll kind of have a dual citizenship. Like, you'll be in the world working and doing your things, but you'll actually have a connection to the higher realms of consciousness, even as you're moving about this world. And that, he said, comes especially from the repetition of the mantra itself and practicing mantra meditation. How does that sit with all of you? You like it? Yeah, the gardening metaphor is really powerful. I was in India recently. I guess the last time was in February, and a friend of mine, we were in some remote part of Bengal, and we were under this tamarind tree, which was supposed to be a very special place, because actually this teacher, Chaitanya, had been there and had held an important teaching under that tree. And so this person who was guiding me around this part of India gave me a pod from that tamarind tree. Do you all know what tamarind is? It's a little bit sour, but it's kind of tasty. It's a tiny little pod, so he said, here, eat this. So I cracked it open, I ate it, it was tasty. And there were two seeds inside. I brought them home. Don't tell anybody. And I germinated them. And I put them in a little pot with an automatic watering system, because I'm barely ever home. And I came back after a couple of weeks and nothing. And I thought, okay, nothing is nothing, but I tried. And then I came back 2 weeks later, and one of them had sprouted. And it was a really big sprout, too. Because I guess with tree sprouts, they come up pretty big. And for some reason, it just gave me a lot of happiness, because, you know, it was like magic. You know, I carried it from that place, put it in and watered it, and it came up. And I thought, well, one out of two is not bad. But then 2 weeks later, the other one came up. So I was just thinking a lot about seeds and how powerful they are. And the mantra is a similar thing. When you plant it in your life and you practice it, water it, then when it sprouts, it changes your life. It changes your whole perspective, because it gives you this basic standing in spiritual practice. So a powerful home spiritual practice, according to the Chaitanya, his teachings, would be that you have some consistency in chanting the mantra on your own time at home. And this is called japa. So japa means to chant the mantra to yourself. It's kind of like you decide, I'm going to do the mantra, I'll do this discipline, and you repeat it, and you listen to the sound. So I spend time every day. My teacher, who I met in 1973, who is one of the teachers descended from Chaitanya, had given me mantras to chant. And so I've been doing it over many years. And I spend time every morning with the mantra and listening to the mantra. And it's endlessly mysterious and interesting. And there are effects that come from chanting the mantra that are very powerful. And so this is one of the practices of meditation that's been around for many, many years, and that anyone can insert into their life even a little bit and see how it works for them. Let's see if you have any more thoughts. Why don't you ask a couple questions? Because that'll amplify or expand the conversation. Questions are a little harder than reflections. Yes?
What was resonating with me? Can we hear now?
No.
Better now?
Here.
We'll share.
Share.
About the states that we will be in, like the Thomas, if I
yeah, remember. I talked about the three modalities, yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, how do you connect the sound that we have been talking about and going from one state to another? Because the bottom state where you can't move your finger is not where you want to be.
Yeah.
So how does it help?
So, remember, I talked about helping yourself 50% of the time, and the 50% of the effort comes from you, and then the other 50% is the power of the mantra. So this idea that you can help yourself by putting yourself in front of the transcendental sound. The sound has such an effect on us. So let's just say you're in a depressed state and you drag yourself in front of a television, if there are such things left in the world. Are there still TVs out there? Okay, let's just say you drag yourself in front of a TV and you turn it on and you get in front of the 24-hour news cycle. I know that's there. And you just listen to that for 12 hours. Binge listen to what's wrong with the world and who said what to whom. Then you would probably, because of the effect of that vibration, stay in the lower modalities. But if you put yourself in front of a higher vibration, like some discussion of the mantra, or actually the mantra itself being recited, and listen into it, because the mantra can be spoken in the form of what I said was japa. Everyone say japa. Japa means to say it loud enough so you can hear it. It's kind of personal meditation. There's also what's called kirtan. Please say kirtan. Kirtan is singing the mantra loud. It's really popular all over the world nowadays. I was at a festival in, what month? June? No, May, in North Carolina. It's annually there. There's musicians come from all over the world, and they sing the mantra out loud. There were 2,000 people there, and you know, for 12 hours during the day, and it's transfixing. So if you put yourself in front of that kind of vibration, then you'll find naturally that you rise to a higher level. So it's actually mentioned in the yogic teachings that by the effect of the transcendental sound, you can rise above the three modalities and come to the highest level. So the sound will help you do that. I'm going to look at my watch because I have a feeling that I've gone over time. 2 minutes. Okay. We have time for one more question, I think. Yes?
I was just wondering what changes you've experienced in your life.
I was wondering
what experiences, or what changes in your life you've experienced from doing mantra.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Well, first of all, I started doing it when I was in high school. Because I kind of had this feeling that, when I was young, I had this sense that a lot of the endeavors that I might be putting into my life weren't that meaningful if I couldn't figure out like the bigger questions, like why I had to die and things like that. So I started experimenting. And when I found the mantra, I found a steady kind of meditation that kept me constantly in touch with spiritual consciousness. And over the years, throughout the different periods of my life, which I usually identify by, decades, where there are various kinds of responsibilities and all kinds of inevitable life experiences that one might have to go through, like, you know, losing one's parents or going through various changes in lifestyle and things like that. The mantra has kept a steady place for me at all those times. And I've experienced shift in my life. I like that word shift that comes about through association with the mantra, from being overwhelmed by circumstances in the world to finding a kind of steadiness where I can deal with the world in a way that's non-reactive. I'm dealing with the world, but I'm not being caught up by it or pulled by it, whereas I know I would be without the mantra. And I compare it to the old admonition that don't shop when you're hungry. Have you ever shopped when you're hungry, despite the fact everyone told you not to do it? I've experienced it a couple times, and I thought, why do I want to buy everything in the store? And I realized, oh, right, don't shop when you're hungry. And in a similar way, when I take the time to do my mantra, especially in the morning before I go out into the world and do the kinds of things that I have to do, then I have a sense of fullness. So I'm not overreacting to things. I'm also not taking in things that I really don't need. I have a sense of enough. Like I felt a little tiny bit of satisfaction, which is really powerful because it helps to keep me steady amidst all kinds of different changes, temptations, and things like that. So I would say those are some of the general ways I could speak about it. So now, officially we're over, but we have this tradition here that after the regular class, I conduct a little workshop on mantra meditation. And if you have time and the inclination, I'm going to make a little circle up here. And I'll go through the japa, practice of japa, because it's something that you can take home with you and practice at home. And then you can try it out. And I thank you very much for taking your time to come here today. I hope there was something worthwhile that you can take away from the discussion, and maybe something on the outline that might resonate with your thoughts and ideas about practicing meditation and coming to a higher level of consciousness. Thank you very much.
Natriyar marman, natriyar marman, hey, natriyar marman, natriyar marman, natriyar marman, natriyar marman.